Hey, we want to tell you about a new podcast episode from our friends at NPR's Planet Money. This episode is called If Elected President, and in it, they basically imagined a future where promises that presidential candidates make come true. And what would actually happen if we, say, offered everyone free college like Bernie Sanders wants to, or adopted Donald Trump's tax plan. So if you want to know what the future looks like, check out Planet Money, wherever you get your podcasts or on the NPR One app. Okay, here's the show. It's the NPR Politics Podcast, here with our weekly roundup of the week's political news. In the wake of Super Tuesday, the Republicans had another messy debate last night. We'll talk about that, the primary states voting this weekend. We'll also answer some of your questions from email and Twitter. And as always, we'll end the show by talking about what we just can't let go this week. I'm Tamara Keith, White House correspondent for NPR.
I'm Sam Sanders, campaign reporter for NPR.
I'm Susan Davis. I cover Congress.
And I'm Domenico Montanaro, political editor.
And we have all survived Super Tuesday, which seems like a minor miracle.
Miracle.
Because there's more stuff coming up.
Oh my gosh. No
time to stop.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Can't stop till you get enough.
But
I've had enough.
But if you, our listeners, haven't heard our Super Tuesday Now What episode, go check that out. So here we are, another Friday, another morning after a GOP debate that sounded like this.
I have a policy question for you,
yes,
sir.
Let's see if he answers it.
I
will. Don't worry about it, Mark. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, little Marco, I will.
All right, well, let's hear Big Don, Donald.
Don't worry about it,
all
little,
right, wait.
Don't worry about it, little Marco.
Gentlemen.
Hey, gentlemen. You ought to show up
in the Senate. Gentlemen, you got to do
Chris,
better than those.
Chris. This guy has the number one...
Mr. Trump, may I ask you a policy question.
It's like the rap battles in 8 Mile when the crowd is just like, ah!
No, that was a good movie.
And good insults, by the
yes.
way.
All right.
So yeah. This was on Fox News. Later, Trump also called Senator Ted Cruz. He called him Lion Ted.
I've given my answer, Lion Ted. I've given my answer.
All right, let's leave it at that.
So later in the show, I think we're going to come up with our own nicknames. So there wasn't a ton of substance in last night's debate, but there was a lot of drama, and that drama was heightened by what happened earlier in the day when Mitt Romney, the 2012 GOP nominee, came out and gave a big speech taking down, or trying to take down, Donald Trump.
Think of Donald Trump's personal qualities, the bullying, the greed, the showing off, the misogyny, the absurd third grade theatrics.
And then he basically laid out a plan for the party to defeat Trump.
I believe we can nominate a person who can win the general election and represent the values and policies of conservatism. Given the current delegate selection process, that means that I'd vote for Marco Rubio in Florida and for John Kasich in Ohio and for Ted Cruz or whichever one of the other two contenders has the best chance of beating Mr. Trump in a given state.
Sue, is this just basically Mitt Romney saying, all right, guys, let's have a contested convention?
Yes, period, full stop. I mean, Mitt Romney, I think what he did yesterday is we can't underscore how significant and historic and huge this was.
Mittens took the gloves off.
The 2012 Republican presidential nominee threw down a gauntlet that said we have to stop the 2016 front runner from getting the nomination. And I know that party leaders and people hesitate to call Donald Trump the front runner, but he is the front runner.
Yeah.
He has won more states. He has more delegates. He has the polling advantage. He has every advantage in this race. And they are now throwing everything at him to stop him. And this is unlike anything we've ever seen.
Well, the thing that really frightens them was watching the Super Tuesday exit polls. I mean, for Donald Trump to win in a place like Georgia and Massachusetts, win Massachusetts with his highest margin of anywhere, meaning he won postgrads, he won a lot of college grads. He's expanded what was thought to be this base of support among high school or less. These are the kinds of numbers and the kind of path that a presumptive nominee get. Now, there's still a lot left to play. There are about 1,000 delegates up between now and March 15th. But what Mitt Romney is calling for means that you would have a contested convention or a brokered convention, because the point is that Marco Rubio would have to hold Florida. John Kasich would have to hold his state of Ohio. Neither of those two guys can win in the other place. And by the way, they're both trailing Donald Trump right now in both of those places.
In their home states, Sam?
What really stood out for me with Mitt's speech was the tone of it.
Yeah.
There's plenty of evidence that Mr. Trump is a con man, a fake. Mr. Trump has changed his positions, not just over the years, but over the course of the campaign. And on the Ku Klux Klan daily for 3 days in a row. We will only really know if he's a real deal or a phony if he releases his tax return.
To hear him say that Trump is a fraud, that Trump is a con man, he called him out for Trump steaks and Trump vodka and Trump University,
and let's say
that was very interesting.
Mitt Romney sought after and accepted Donald Trump's endorsement in his own 2012 election.
Yeah.
It's my honor, real honor, and privilege to endorse Mitt Romney. I've gotten...
At Trump Tower in Las Vegas.
In the photo, he had wow.
But he had a great line then when he sort of stepped back and you could see Romney say, well, I never thought I'd be standing here and doing this today.
There are some things that you just can't imagine happening in your life. This is one of them. being in Donald Trump's magnificent hotel and having his endorsement is a delight.
You know.
And Mitt Romney said that he tweeted out that he would not have accepted Donald Trump's endorsement in 2012. But let's do a little bit of fact checking.
But wasn't 2012 the birther stuff going on?
Yes, Donald Trump was Donald Trump.
Started off.
Yes.
Donald Trump was Donald Trump in 2012 too.
Exactly.
And maybe some of the statements he said in this race have been more provocative would have challenged that. But who he is not a shock to the American people.
He was full on birther.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that was the only thing he was known for.
But
he
that
wasn't
was a
known.
Big thing.
He wasn't known yet for saying that Mexicans who come to the country are rapists and some are good people. He wasn't at the time saying that we shouldn't allow any Muslims into the country. He opened a further Pandora's box that became, much more difficult to squeeze back in.
How much, will this have an effect? It's not like there is a large trove of Mitt Romney supporters waiting to see what he thinks, right?
In the debate last night, the audience booed when they asked about Mitt Romney.
President Mitt Romney had some things to say about you today. He said your domestic policy will lead to recession.
But, Mitt Romney is not acting without the consent of
the establishment.
The establishment.
Okay.
He did not give this speech of his own accord.
You think he was asked?
I think that there are forces at work in the Republican Party that are now colluding to see what
grasping
they can do
to
stop them.
Right, and there is that donor network of people who Mitt Romney thought he could have used to get into this race way back last year. And Romney was right at the precipice of getting in. And made the decision not to. And, I think he's had to have watched a lot of these debates and be really annoyed that no one has been able to shred Donald Trump the way he felt like he was able to go after people like Herman Cain and Michelle Bachmann and everybody else in that 2012 Republican primary. Mitt Romney was a very good debater on those kinds of points, and he was able to do things that I think some of these Republicans have not been able to do to Donald Trump.
But this doesn't change the game, does it? It does not change the game.
It's part of a pattern, though. So you have the Romney speech that happened. It also opened the door for other Republican leaders like John McCain to then put out statements to say, I agree with Mitt Romney. You also
have the 08 nominee.
You also have three major groups, two super PACs, both anti-Trump super PACs, and the Club for Growth, which is another big Republican group, all piling money into Florida right now to try and make sure Donald Trump does not win Florida. There are real substantive movements on this chessboard happening right now.
To try to make that contested convention happen.
I want to go back to the debate. Let's go to this moment that happened early in the debate, and it's about hands.
I have to say this. He hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee it. Okay. Moving on.
He could have just left it there right? And said, these aren't, if he had to go there, but he didn't have to go there, but then to go further.
But
as Domenico pointed out, on Twitter last night, I think, like, we kind of spent more time in this debate on hand size than we did on, like, Flint, Michigan.
On Flint, which is amazing. They were in Michigan.
Well, the audience was pretty white, too, in Detroit.
But regardless, I mean, the fact is the debate moderators have a responsibility to set out a course of responsible questioning, okay?
Yeah.
The fact is, like, you have to try to get to the serious substantive issues. And when you're in the state where people were drinking poisoned water— it's with a Republican governor. It's amazing. And you have a governor on that stage in John Kasich from Ohio. You have three other people who want to run the country. It's not just a debate about the Republican Party. And even if it is a debate with the Republican Party, how is it that Democrats are allowed to just own clean water? Is that really
But they basically are letting Democrats own clean water.
Well,
because
and like Marco Rubio was asked about it.
What happened in Flint was a terrible thing. It was a systemic breakdown at every level of government, at both the federal and partially at both the state and partially at the federal level as well. And by the way, the politicizing of it, I think, is unfair, because I don't think that someone woke up one morning and said, let's figure out how to poison the water system to hurt someone. But accountability is important. I will say I give the governor credit. He took responsibility for what happened.
So and he's rallying around the governor instead of, you know, trying to say what they would do differently to govern.
And the Democrats, we should say, are going to have a debate in Flint, Michigan on Sunday. We're going to get to that very soon in the podcast. But back to the debate. Did we learn anything about policy?
I think we learned that Donald Trump is not afraid to admit that he's changed his mind on lots of policy positions. And I must say, I found that refreshing, because I think all politicians do that, but they want to hedge about it. And he said several times on several issues, I changed my mind.
And here he is saying that about immigration policy.
Yeah.
I'm changing. We need highly skilled people in this country. And if we can't do it, we'll get them in. But, and we do need in Silicon Valley, we absolutely have to have. So we do need highly skilled. And one of the biggest problems we have is people go to the best colleges. They'll go to Harvard. They'll go to Stanford. They'll go to Wharton. As soon as they're finished, they get shoved out. They go. They want to stay in this country. They want to stay here desperately. They're not able to stay here. For that purpose, we absolutely have to be able to keep the brain power in this country.
So you are abandoning the position on your website.
I'm changing it, and I'm softening the position, because we have to have talented people in this country.
I mean, like, I have
pivoting
to say,
to the general
I was
already.
He doesn't
talk like politicians talk.
And that's part of his appeal.
Yeah.
Like, that works.
And you'll see that, like, with Hillary Clinton, where she won't necessarily say that she changed, and she'll find some
evolved.
Way to
evolve. Yeah. There's been a lot of evolution.
Yeah.
But what's amazing, though, is that flexibility, ideological flexibility, is not usually something that works well in a Republican primary. And the fact that Donald Trump is able to say that, and it probably no repercussions, is amazing.
And this is Cruz's argument against Trump, is that you can't trust him because he doesn't believe in anything. But, you know, that he tried that in South Carolina. There were ads in South Carolina. So this is, I guess, this is my bigger question. Does anything matter? Does any of this matter?
I have a theory about what matters more. I think over the course of the last several debates, Americans writ large, particularly swing voters, have come to see the GOP race as a circus, as a hot dumpster fire. And, like, I think that's going to turn people off.
I think Republicans wanted to avoid anything that looked like what they thought was circus-like from 2012,
and now we're
which
full
is
circus.
Why they wanted to shrink the number of debates.
Yeah.
I think after last night, they probably wish that they had shrunk the debates by one at least, because we've heard a lot of what they talked about before. You know, we've heard a lot of the policy arguments. We've heard a lot of, you know, everything when they had 15 candidates on stage. You know, so there isn't a whole lot of new ground for them to tread. And when you get to that point, then you wind up with this kind of debate.
And that must turn off some voters, right?
Well, but except hot dumpster fire and all, the Republicans have record turnout.
Yeah.
State after state after state after state. So,
and that is 100% attributable to Donald Trump.
One Donald J. Trump.
Well, and Barack Obama.
I also think
anger at Barack Obama.
We are watching in some ways the Republican Party fracture. I mean, we're watching it in
not
real
just
time.
Fracture,
and
explode.
It's been happening for a while, but it's becoming more and more to the forefront. And I think it's important to remember that a lot of base voters, a lot of people that are voting in the Republican primary, look at the party elites like Mitt Romney and see him as much the problem
as Democrats, that they do not differentiate between the parties. It's about elites in Washington.
And you hear that argument all the time from people like Ted Cruz, too, right? Or, and the Tea Party. Well, they'll say, we elected somebody who was moderate in Mitt Romney. We elected somebody who was supposedly the most moderate in John McCain. They elected Bob Dole. You know, those people all lost. So they need to rally around somebody who's more conservative. And with Donald Trump, there was one line he had last night in that debate where he said, you know, it doesn't matter because that's how I feel.
Last two debates ago about waterboarding. And Ted was, you know, having a hard time with that question, to be totally honest with you. They then came to me. What do you think of waterboarding? I said, it's fine. And if we want to go stronger, I'd go stronger, too, because, frankly, that's the way I feel.
And that maybe summarizes the entire, like, reason for his candidacy. It's
a feeling.
He's making people feel something on the Republican side, on the conservative side, that is fueling his candidacy.
Okay, so this debate was all about taking down Donald Trump, dumping Trump. But then at the end, they were all asked, would you support Donald Trump if he's the nominee?
Yes or no?
I'll support Donald if he's the Republican nominee, and let me tell you why. Because the Democrats have two people left in the race.
Yes, because I gave my word that I would.
And I will support whoever is the Republican nominee for president.
Mr. Trump, I'm going to...
And they all said yes.
They were like, psych.
Which is really amazing. I mean, you had Mitt Romney earlier in the day saying Donald Trump was a phony and a fraud. You had Marco Rubio having made the argument that he'd be dangerous for America. John Kasich certainly stands apart as, quote-unquote, the adult in the room, as he called himself last night. And when it came down to it, all of them said that they would support Donald Trump, which then in the end says, well, how dangerous is he anyway?
What is the strategy with that? And, like, is this a thing about the convention and whether or not it's brokered or open, as they say?
I think it's also a lot about thinking about the general election, because then the one thing they say is even Donald Trump's better than Hillary Clinton is what they say. So that, I think it's that pivot where they want to protect themselves from when Hillary Clinton uses all these cuts in her campaign ads.
Which she will.
And Marco Rubio made that exact argument with Stephen's Keep on Morning Edition this morning in talking about how, well, you know, it's not a good reason to vote for Donald Trump, but it's better than Hillary Clinton.
And we are going to talk about Hillary Clinton in just a moment. But first, we have to take a break.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Personal Capital, combining free online financial tools that provide unprecedented transparency with personal attention from dedicated financial advisors. The result is a complete transformation in the way you understand, manage, and grow your net worth. On the web at personalcapital.com/politics.
Okay, we're back. And on the Democratic side of the race, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are getting ready for a debate of their own Sunday in Flint, Michigan. Sam, what are you looking for?
I am expecting the Sanders campaign to try to pivot a bit in their strategy of outreach to black voters. They're saying that they expect some difference between northern black voters and southern black voters. And so their hope with Michigan black voters is to talk about how Clinton-supported trade policies have hurt the black working class. I'm just not sure if it's going to work or not.
And Sanders tweeted out, his campaign tweeted out a photo of houses in Detroit that had been abandoned and blamed it directly on trade policy.
These were like pictures of decrepit houses.
Blight.
So the thing that I kept hearing was that a lot of what happened in South Carolina was that they didn't have enough time to really connect with black voters. But at this point, Bernie's been in the campaign for 10 months. He's had a lot of surrogates of color in and out of that state and around the country. At some point, it's not going to be about time anymore. And I don't know if there's any reason to expect a significant shift in the black vote from south to north after South Carolina.
There's also, to me, if Bernie can't win Michigan, to me, this seems like it would be a very significant loss for him, because even beyond the black vote, Michigan is a state where Bernie Sanders' economic message
should resonate
the most. His trade policies, I think why he's hitting that is NAFTA is still lingers in a state as something that was devastating
hugely
to
unpopular
jobs in the state. I just think on the economic argument, if Sanders gets smoked in Michigan, you know, he doesn't have to leave this race, but it just seems that Hillary Clinton becomes more inevitable if she wins big in Michigan.
But I also think that Sanders' team is not concerned about trying to leave this race at any point soon.
Yeah.
Well, then, for them, it's an issues fight. It's about ideas. It's about ideology. And they feel like they owe it to their small donors who believe in this fight to keep going.
But I think Michigan is Bernie Sanders' last stand. The way his aides were talking about it, I mean, they were basically saying, you know, okay, you know, these southern states, but Michigan, that's our state. And frankly, like, you've done the delegate math, Domenico, yeah. But he needs to start winning some stuff.
In big margins,
because Hillary Clinton is when Hillary Clinton wins these states, she's winning with huge margins.
Well, and we should note, though, that for what the numbers are at this point,
are they?
Bernie Sanders would need about 53% of all the pledged delegates remaining to win.
So that's delegates that come from primaries and caucuses.
Right, and that are not superdelegates, who are these unpledged party leaders and elected officials. With them factored in, because Hillary Clinton has such a huge lead with them, he would need 59% of all the delegates remaining. Because of the proportionality of how delegates are allocated from here on out, you know, how you vote, basically the percentage that you get statewide is the percentage that you get of the delegates, essentially. Some of them have some congressional district portions in that. But because of that, it makes it a very difficult aircraft carrier to turn around. Now, we should say the pledged delegate number is the one to watch, because that super delegate number, you know,
It can change.
And if Bernie Sanders were to win somehow the pledged delegate number and loses based on the super delegate number, you talk about a convention fight for Republicans. You would definitely have a splitting and a fracturing among liberal Democrats at the convention.
But before Michigan, there are actually a number of states voting or caucusing over the weekend. Bernie Sanders is actually likely to win some of those. But let's just really quick run through all of the voting that's happening this weekend. Sue Davis.
Saturday is probably the most significant day, particularly for Republicans, and whether this establishment takedown Trump strategy is getting any traction. Republicans have contests in Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, and Maine. Donald Trump is ahead in all of them. I haven't seen polling in Maine. I should take that back. But in the three states where they have polls, he's up anywhere between 12 to 20 points. So if he doesn't win, that could be a moment where we say, oh, wait a minute. Is this strategy really working? It's also going to be an interesting test because these are closed primaries, which what that means is if you're not a registered Republican, you can't vote in these contests. And Trump has done better in states where independents and other voters could vote. In closed primaries, Ted Cruz has done better. This is why part of the reason why he won Oklahoma. He won Alaska. Those are closed primary states. So this is a chance for Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio to show that they can chip away at Trump support. If he wins all four of these states, it is just further proves the inevitability
and
of Trump.
In particular for Ted Cruz, who's about 90 delegates behind Donald Trump, he's, you know, makes the case that he can win these values voters. He whiffed on Super Tuesday. He won Texas. He won Oklahoma. But he lost in all of those other places he could have won: Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, against Donald Trump. He'll have another opportunity this weekend to show that he can win with those values voters.
And on Sunday, just to round it out, we have Maine and Puerto Rico. Okay, we're going to take one more break, and then we will be right back with some listener questions and Can't Let It Go.
We'd like to say a quick thank you to one of our sponsors, Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can avoid time-consuming trips to the post office. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your computer. 500,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use the promo code POLITICS for a special offer. A 4-week trial, plus postage, and a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and type in POLITICS.
Okay, guys, it's mail time, and we're going to try to do a few of these lightning round style. I got a question on Twitter this week about why candidates like Jeb Bush or any of the others that have dropped out, and possibly Ben Carson tonight, most likely, why do they always say that they are suspending their campaigns instead of saying that they're ending them or dropping out? My answer is pride and something related to campaign finance. Domenico,
I've written about this before, and it's really a political distinction rather than a legal distinction. It's more of a soft landing politically for them. The thing is, with the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, you actually aren't allowed to, quote, terminate your campaign until you've paid off debts and obligations.
Of which there might be a few for a lot of these guys.
Hillary Clinton, in fact, had so much in debt and obligation
like years, right?
After that 2008 campaign that she owed millions of dollars to certain vendors, and it took years for her to be able to pay those off. There was a time in this country where candidates took public funds. Remember those matching funds? Well, if you said that you were suspending your campaign, it still allowed you to collect those matching funds in order to pay off those debts and obligations, or staffers, or lighting, or whatever else. Nowadays, that doesn't matter so much. Nobody's taking public funds, so it's not a reason for why they're doing it. But suspending versus ending, just a political distinction, not a legal one. And we should say Ben Carson hasn't even said that he's suspending anything at this point.
He said, like, maybe, maybe not, IDK.
He said he sees no political path for his future.
But he also said that he wasn't dropping out yet. Right, right.
But then he didn't go to the debate.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of questions like this. Max emailed to ask, when a candidate drops out of the presidential race, what happens to the delegates they've already won?
Well, when a candidate drops out of a race, delegates, if you're before March 15th at the first round of balloting at the Republican National Convention, they have to vote for that candidate. So Jeb Bush, other candidates who won, four delegates, one delegate, they have to vote for them on that first ballot. After the first ballot, these people are all free agents, can go however they want.
And at the Republican Convention, we might actually have more than one ballot.
We might see it this time.
Angela from Spokane emailed to ask, why has the Republican establishment failed to rally support for John Kasich? She thought he seemed like a good candidate for the Republicans this year.
So that's a good question. I think the easiest answer is he didn't do well enough in the early state contests and the contests we've had so far. If Kasich had more victories and had won more states, I think we might be having a different argument. Maybe Marco Rubio would be in that fourth slot on the stage and we'd be talking about Kasich. The talk around Kasich now is that, is he now weighing people like Rubio and Ted Cruz down, that he doesn't have a path forward, and is him staying in the race making it harder to mount a campaign against Trump?
He's fourth in the delegate race, 25 delegates only so far. Things might change if he wins Michigan and pulls something off big.
And there's actually a lot of frustration at John Kasich right now for staying in a race he can't win.
And is he also too much like a Democrat?
You know, this for whatever reason, one of the many interesting things to me about 2016 was this was the year that one of the other reasons it defied conventional wisdom is governors just fell flat time after time after time again for reasons I think they're just seen as too establishment, too closely linked to the party. It has just not been a good year to be a governor and run for president.
And one last question, and we get this from time to time, about why we talk about Hillary Clinton's superdelegate count as if those votes are final, because technically superdelegates could switch their support to Bernie Sanders at some point.
Right. Superdelegates are unpledged. They can vote however they want at the convention. They certainly could switch from Hillary Clinton to Bernie Sanders, but she has such a whopping lead with them that any kind of huge movement of superdelegates to Bernie Sanders is highly unlikely. In 2008, Barack Obama certainly peeled off some of those Hillary Clinton superdelegates, but it was not a huge swath of them that would then put him over the top. He did wind up winning a lot of superdelegates, and he won the pledged delegates. And as he won those pledged delegates, more superdelegates came with him. And that's why the Clinton campaign is so focused on winning that pledged delegate count.
And I will say that Clinton's campaign does not talk about superdelegates at all. In fact, I think the only people talking about superdelegates are Sanders' campaign.
The Sanders campaign. So Wednesday morning after Super Tuesday, they said Clinton's numbers in that regard are very squishy, and they kind of left the door open to say that that could be a challenge down the road. But should we expect that?
It would be a very difficult argument to make if Bernie Sanders were to win the pledged delegate count and then the superdelegates were to decide the race. Ironically, this is exactly the reason why superdelegates were created in the 80s to make it less likely that a candidate they saw as problematic or couldn't win in a general election, in their view, that's why they were created, to stop someone like that.
This could very well be academic very soon, though, because of the way Hillary Clinton is just sort of plowing through
the
states and winning the pledged delegates. She's winning the primaries. She's winning the caucuses. Unless Bernie Sanders starts winning soon in a big way,
there's no argument to make
about the superdelegates.
And if he did turn it around, he would have an argument.
Before we go to Can't Let It Go, I know earlier we talked about Little Marco and Lying Ted and Big Donald. And I want to know, what do you guys think your names would be? I would be Lil Tam Tam.
Aww.
I am 5'1¼", so I think I...
And a quarter. Hold on to that quarter.
Okay.
All right, Sue, what are you?
I have actually been called this in the past, so I would go by Sizzle Dizzle.
You've been called that?
Yeah. I like SDZ.
I did not make that up for this podcast.
So who? SDZ.
SDZ.
Yeah. SDZ's good.
Where, a lot of people do just call me Sue D, too, because it's kind of like an 80s rapper
kind of thing,
you know?
Oh.
All right, Sam, what would you be?
So I got called Urkel a lot growing up because I looked like him.
I could see
it. Oh, wow.
Did you wear really high
but
pants?
But now you're Stefan Urkel.
I'm Stefan.
Stefan, do you remember those episodes?
Yeah, I remember Stefan. But here's the thing. My parents tried to get me to enter a Steve Urkel lookalike contest as a child. And I was like, no, I will hate you guys forever. Anyways, because of that, my rap name can be Urkelicious, or I could be Double S, or, yeah.
Is that the reason for the Chrome Dome, too?
That's just male pattern baldness. Glad we went there.
I'm just, you know, if we're channeling Donald Trump, everything is superficial in here.
Okay, Domenico, what's your nickname?
Well, you know, I've been called D-Money or D-Nice.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah.
It's all very early 90s. Yes. It's okay.
All right. It's time for Can't Let It Go, where we all share one thing we just can't stop thinking about this week, politics or otherwise. Sam Sanders.
Have y'all seen that Vine from last night?
And we all swallow hard when we know this is coming.
Can we just hear me out before the sighs?
Uh-huh.
So Ted Cruz seemed to have a little fleck of something like on his lip that he ended up licking into his mouth over the course of the debate. And there were several theories about what it was. There were several creepy vines and GIFs and images of it. And
Spittle?
I have a theory.
Spittle.
No, it was solid.
It was solid.
Some people were saying Tic Tacs.
No,
it was a Tic Tac.
Wait for it.
All right.
I think Ted Cruz has tonsil stones. This is a serious, quantifiable medical condition. The scientific name for it is tonsilliliths.
Have you confirmed this with his campaign?
I have. Well, he won't write me back since I asked him if he was the Zodiac Killer.
Oh,
last
I forgot you did that.
I did.
Week to
but anyways, here's the thing. It happens to lots of people. If your tonsils are too big or you've just had tonsillitis, sometimes stuff gets stuck in your tonsils.
Okay.
Mucus.
Okay, stop.
Cells,
no,
whatever.
No.
But
so Sue Davis, what's
hold
your
on. It bundles up, becomes a stone, and then you cough it out. So
okay.
Maybe that's what happened.
Maybe.
Lena Dunham has had him. She's talked about it. It's a thing.
Has he released his medical records yet?
I don't know, but I have questions.
I don't know if that would be in there.
I'm just saying, if Ted Cruz had tonsil stones, he is not alone. Don't suffer in pain alone, Ted. There are people who feel your plight, man.
Yep.
Okay.
Now
we're
all feeling this
I feel
plight.
Like we needed a disclaimer.
I can let that go.
Yeah, we needed a disclaimer
okay,
that said, hopefully you're not eating your Wheaties right now because you might not be able to keep them down.
It does make me wonder about the last time I had a cleaning
at the
dentist.
I spent 5 minutes on WebMD.
I
spent 5 minutes on the WebMD. I know things, okay?
WebMD.
Did you? Oh, I'm like a doctor on WebMD. Yeah, I'm like basically an internet doctor. So.
All right, Dr. Davis?
My Can't Let It Go this week is a little bit off topic, but nonetheless something I really was obsessed with this week was earlier in the week on Monday, Justice Clarence Thomas spoke from the bench. And the fact that Clarence Thomas never speaks from the bench, he has not spoken from the bench in 10 years. It's sort of a Washington curiosity that in all of these oral arguments, he's always been known to stay silent. A couple years ago, he made a joke towards something Antonin Scalia said, but he wasn't engaging in the cases before him. On Monday, there was a gun case. The substance of the case is not what I'm interested in here. What is interesting is that Clarence Thomas asked a question from the bench. And in the stories that were reported in it, obviously there's no cameras allowed
multiple
in the court.
Multiple questions.
That the wires all reported that there was like an audible gasp in
really?
The room. That
when
people
he talked.
Were like, like, Clarence Thomas says something.
What does his voice sound like?
It's really deep and really booming. The other Clarence Thomas thing I was also obsessed about.
Another one.
Is he was caught by TMZ, the celebrity network.
Yeah.
Caught is, you know, sounds negative, but he was filmed coming out of the Capitol Grill, which is a Washington restaurant, and he was actually very funny and engaged with this TMZ cameraman who asked him if he would support Lance Ito for the Supreme Court.
Wait, what? Judge Ito?
Yes!
the judge from the O.J. Simpson trial.
And
any
chance President Obama might nominate Judge Ito?
Who knows? What do I know?
He has a chance.
I'm just a civil servant.
I know he.
Wow,
that was a good laugh.
Yeah, he's got a great laugh.
He got to be looking for some work a little bit. No,
but you're a funny guy. What do? You just sort of stand around and photobomb people.
No.
Yes,
I know you. I'm just giving you a hard
okay,
time.
Okay, man. We love your work, man.
You cracked me up. Did you go to NYU?
No, my sister did. Great school.
Was she at law school there?
No, she did. She did journalism.
You can
also
hear his voice. He's got a nice voice.
Wonderful school.
Yeah.
So you go around bothering people?
No. Actually, we find interesting people. What did you have to eat? I know you had steak dinner. No. Come on, man. Come on. Was it good at least?
Was it excellent?
Okay, man. Have a good one.
Oh, Claire.
He's really into this.
It was just very funny. That's I just thought it was very funny. So that was my Can't Let It Go.
All right, Domenico.
My Can't Let It Go has nothing to do with dental work, tonsils, or, you know, Clarence Thomas talking. But a little bit on also more about talking, since it seems to be our theme, and when you can report something and not report something. Because in the debate last night, you heard Donald Trump pushed on his apparently off-the-record conversation with the New York Times editorial board, which happens every so often where, you know, candidates will go in and talk to an editorial board, but talk to them off the record.
I did have a meeting with the editorial board of the New York Times, a very nice meeting. Many of those things were off the record, I think at their suggestion and my suggestion. And I think being off the record is a very important thing. I think it's a very, very powerful thing. And I will say this.
But I just have to say, and I tweeted this out last night, you know, it's never the reporters who are the ones stipulating that something should be off the record, right? I mean, we're all reporters here. Sometimes we'll say, okay, well, can you tell me off the record? But that's because we're trying, the person wouldn't say on the record.
Yeah. What's the precedent for this kind of public back and forth over an off the record conversation?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I've never
weird.
Really.
It's weird, right?
One doesn't come to the top of my head on like releasing an off the record transcript. I mean, there's always, you know, some question about when somebody has, you know, a mixed history ideologically, and you know, you want to know what somebody really thinks behind the scenes. I mean, think about some of the leaked videos from 2008 campaign where Barack Obama was taped talking about people clinging to their guns and religion.
Oh yeah, was
people,
that off the record?
Well,
it was at a fundraiser.
Okay. Closed door fundraiser.
Closed door fundraisers. Those things don't usually get out.
Yeah.
And someone went in and, you know, surreptitiously recorded this, and it gave a window into what President Obama actually believed.
Kind of like the 47% thing.
I was just
going to
say the 47% thing from Mitt Romney at that bar where somebody set up a little video and then leaked it to Mother Jones, the liberal magazine. So, you know, we have heard those kinds of things come out. Anyway, go ahead, Tam.
Okay, so the thing I can't let go is Senator Marco Rubio in his web store for his campaign has started selling all of these items, hashtag never Trump, like a red Trumpian hat that says hashtag never Trump. It's $30.
Wow.
Stickers, T-shirts, wristbands, like the Livestrong wristbands. But the thing that's interesting to me about this is he's now fundraising off of this never Trump concept. Meanwhile, he actually, at the end of the debate, said, well, maybe Trump.
Yeah, and
it was
also,
like, psych.
He didn't actually say never. He said, possibly, sometimes, maybe, if he's the nominee, Trump.
Yeah. It was also really weird that after the debate, when they all said that they're okay with Trump being the nominee, that immediately after the debate, the Rubio campaign was tweeting out their new hashtag dump Trump yoga pants.
Wait, was the dump Trump on the
dump
seat
Trump
of the pants?
No, it was on the leg.
Okay. Because if it was on the...
No, I gotcha. We didn't need to go there.
Oh, more potty
thanks
words.
Thanks for the...
So many potty words. Yeah. All right, that is all that we have time for today.
Thank goodness.
If you like the show, please rate it on iTunes. That helps other people find us and helps us keep doing it. You can find us on Twitter, send us your questions there, or by email. Our address is nprpolitics@npr.org. Thank you for writing us. We know we can't get to every question or answer every note, but we do read all of them. I'm Tamara Keith, or Little Tam Tam, White House correspondent for NPR.
I'm Sam Sanders, a.k.a. Urkalicious, a.k.a. Tonsil Stones, campaign reporter at NPR.
I'm Susan Davis, Sizzle Dizzle. I cover Congress.
I'm Domenico Montanaro, otherwise known as D-Money.
D-Money?
Yes, it's okay.
All right. Thank you all for listening to the NPR Politics Podcast.